Hey there, ho there, you're listening to Super Tool Shed, the only podcast on the internet that knows what you think about when you touch yourself at night. I'm Bennett the Sage, I'm joined by Mark the Engineer, as well as a very special returning guest, Uncle Yo! All three of us have gathered to talk about, well, whatever the hell we want. Yuppers, it's another junk drawer episode happening right now in the shed. But first, the pleasantries. Mark, Uncle, how have you been? And no, guest does not go first. You're on the platform there, Mark.
You can eat a dick. Big bag of dicks. How dare you break Guest Goes First called it.
Woo!
You horrible bastard. Alright, you want to know how I'm doing?
Fine.
It's hard because the crack could have come from either the knuckles, the neck, or simply the bend of the crowbar as he prepares his answer.
Oh, don't worry. There's definitely a crowbar in Bennett's future. But it's not going across his back. It's going to go right up his ass.
That's not how the Joker killed Jason Todd.
No, but it's how I'm going to kill Bennett. We can make a comic out of that, though. We can have, like, an anime abandoned comic. I'm sure that would fly off shelves.
Except the 1-800 number doesn't include, like, does he live or die? It's how slowly does he die? Over 24 hours or over 48 hours?
I'd like to think Dan DiDio has been doing that with Kyle Rayner over the last 6 years.
Oh, fuck Rayner. Fucking fuck Rayner. Alright, so, since it's not Guest Goes First called it, because Bennett's a dick, my fuel pump died. Awesome!
So does that mean you have to carve out the bottom of the Knight Rider a la, like, a can of sardines and then start pedaling around with your feet? Because in Philly traffic, that would actually move you much faster.
Shut up, motherfucker. You live in New York. Don't talk to me about traffic, son.
Our gridlock forms Goldilocks and pigtails from that. You can braid our traffic.
Yeah, exactly. Don't talk to me about Philly traffic. At least I can get somewhere at rush hour. The fuel pump was making a buzzy noise, and I said to myself, all right, normally I would like to stay ahead of these problems, but I've got a million other things to do, secret projects and whatnot. So I said, hopefully this buzzing sounds, uncharacteristically of me, will just persist through the spring, but I can worry about it in relatively warm weather. Not that we haven't been having good weather. Unseasonably good weather. Thanks, climate change. But I was coming back from a Wawa, and I hit a bump, and then all six of my injectors just went bye-bye. So that happened for a quarter second, and then the car just turned itself back on, and I went, yeah, I know what that is. So I limped my ass home, and I had to order a brand new fuel pump and brand new fuel sending unit, because whether or not my fuel sending unit is broken, which it is a teensy-weensy little bit broken, it's the sort of job where if you do anything inside of the gas tank, you pretty much do everything inside of the gas tank, because you don't want to have to do it twice.
Which does remind me, George Miller has been signed on to do two more Mad Max movies. Bennett, what do you think the engineer's name would be in the Mad Max universe? Because my guess would be Daisy. Daisy the Crippler.
I don't know where the fuck you just came up with that. Like, that it had no lead-in whatsoever.
He's talking so much about cars, and all I'm thinking is, damn, if I could staple the back of a Cadillac on top of another Cadillac and put that on top of a monster truck, I would. Mainly because, like, I'm discussing plans for my bachelor party a year from now, and the only thing that comes to mind is I need to Mad Max out some go-karts and bring paintballing back into it.
So go-kart paintballing?
Yes.
Once again, you will be pink and pretty.
How will you hit anything? You're going like 45 miles an hour around a dirt track.
I don't know. People do real-life Mario Kart as possible.
Yeah, real-life Mario Kart, but that's around like an actual racetrack. For paintballing, you would have to have like this open space full of mud. And what's the point of paintballing if you're just going to be covered with mud anyway?
The pain involved.
That sounds like the point of paintball. No one gets into paintball to preserve the beautiful white shirt.
No, yeah. but how could you see, like, yeah, I hit you, but you're covered in mud, so now I can't actually prove
Well, it's not, well, okay, first off, let's just, you've never been hit by a paintball in your life, have you, Bennett?
Yes, I have.
Have you?
Uh-huh.
Do you remember the girly scream you made?
Nope, I just remember like, ah, fuck!
Like I said, girly scream.
I'm pretty sure he would also remember his mother cackling.
That's for not cleaning your room.
We all had rough childhoods growing up. I grew up on a 150-acre paintball range in the Poconos. Legitimate, it was called Wolf Slayer. We had wolves. I grew up being shot at.
Yeah, true, but like on a go-kart, how are you going to hit anything when you're going 30 miles an hour, they're going 30 miles an hour? You couldn't hit the broadside of a barn.
Because straightaways, because look, if you get all zigzaggy, you're not really going to go anywhere.
Because just because my friends are riding go-kart doesn't mean that they need guns. I am standing in a turret.
Oh.
We've had this planned out.
It's your party. I see what it is.
I see. So it's less.
I bring the barrel. You guys are the ducks.
So I'm guessing that this is less paintball match than skeet shoot.
Well, yes.
So then what's the fucking wedding going to be? Like human sacrifice?
We're thinking a nice barbecue.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, car talk, that's as far as car talk goes. Beyond that, it's just been me writing and me building and me swearing at my rig and me wishing that I had better hardware. But that's pretty much been the gist of it. Although, also, you know, like, what about all those lovely episodes of Anime Abandoned that have come out recently? Aren't they thoughtful?
Aren't they thoughtful? Aren't they probably the best episodes I've made back to back in quite a while? I as well as the Slayers review came out, I never thought for a moment that that would be the weak link of the month. But it turned out it was. I never intended it to, but it just, that's just how, you know, the dice came out. That's how the dice rolled.
Yes, and now the bad news, kids. There's only going to be 2 episodes of Anime Abandoned in the month of November.
But along with this Super Tool shit that you're listening to right now, we're also going to have, of course, a Nuts and Bolts on Sins of the Sisters, as well as a special behind-the-scenes video that should be up on Saturday for all of those of you who are listening.
It is amazing, just the breakneck speed that has to happen, especially with independent and online creators. Like, I remember when Jurassic Park 3 and 4, may they never be mentioned again, when they came out on DVD, one of the biggest pitches was, there's twice the length of the movie on these discs of just behind the scenes and talkings and the interviews and all the machinations that go behind it. And for a huge fan that I am of pre-production and post-production, I love the people behind the camera. I love the whole drama and the politics of even getting a simple story filmed. But when you have just a limited staff of creators, it almost becomes its own challenge of keeping the behind-the-stuff stuff as interesting as the stuff in front of the camera. And I have to say, you guys have been pretty consistent with keeping it just as funny as the finished product.
Well, see, that's only because I'm not actually physically there. That's why so much dicking around happens in the B-roll.
Occasionally. Although, you know, for story time, folks, back when we were filming the Violence Jack review, Gabe had to apply my makeup to make me look haggard and just sleepless. And this was the first time I wore eyeliner. We were talking about this on the Nuts and Bolts episode of it. But during that makeup process, you grabbed your camera and you started videotaping me getting the makeup applied. And unfortunately, I couldn't find a use for it. Because I didn't think anyone would want to see the behind-the-scenes video of it, because they'd be too angry at the episode to even want to see anything regarding it. And it turns out I was half right.
Mm. I mean, B-roll is always valuable no matter what the source material is. Like, I would watch the B-roll of fucking Tank Girl. You know.
Just for the blackmail potential.
Like, honestly, I love watching all the B-roll stuff because it's interesting to see the movie not quite made yet. It's interesting to see people sitting, you know, like, by the craft services table being miserable and making conversation while they wait for 6 hours to film 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, not only that, but there's the old cliche that a movie is made 3 times. And we were taught this again and again in college, which was the movie is made once when it's written, twice when it's directed and shot and filmed, and third, in the editing room. It's just spectacular to see what happens when background music is slightly changed or when that one cut is lingered for far too long, that there's that weird itch and somehow the scene is completely different.
It's a quirk of movie making that I think goes by the wayside for people who are just there to see what's going to appear on the screen. For cinephiles or cineasts, as they like to be called.
Do they really?
Yeah, cineasts.
Oh, fuck those guys. Oh, for fuck's sake.
Weren't those an evil alien race on Doctor Who?
Sounds like it. Just, geez.
But for people who are interested, not just, you know, movies, but the work and passion and sometimes the deprivation and just the madness that can go into it, it's equally as fascinating as the movie itself. Like the documentary Heart of Darkness is better than Apocalypse Now, I think, because
no, without a doubt,
it is one of the more intriguing examples of the kinds of situations that you can get yourself into only by being a part of a film crew.
One of my favorite shots of that is Coppola on camera. 3, 2, where are the helicopters going? What? As he just learns, the helicopters have to stop filming the fake war to go 30 feet away and fight the real world war happening there with real live napalm on people who hopefully are not extras hired for the film. And A Heart of Darkness is watching Coppola go slowly insane versus Apocalypse Now, which is slowly watching Marlon Brando get fatter.
Which is actually, it's good that you brought that up, because I actually recently saw the documentary about the making of that ill-fated 90s Island of Dr. Moreau, where Marlon Brando just, you know, he has long since teetered off the edge of madness. And now it becomes like, what do we have to do to keep Marlon Brando on set?
to keep him from wandering off eating another intern or another sandwich. It's funny because this generation may have their Shia LaBeouf or their I almost said River Phoenix, and I gotta apologize for that. Their Joaquin Phoenix psycho breakdown.
Joaquin Phoenix basically admitted that he was just trolling.
Precisely. Because that was just insincere. Versus the generation before, when our celebrities went crazy, they dove and dived off the deep end. They changed every vowel. They daved off the deep end. They dooved off the deep end. They weren't coming back.
And then there's the tragic examples like Margot Kidder. And then there's the fun examples like I said, like Marlon Brando, who, like, the kind of madness that he had was less about, like, oh, somebody should get some help. And it's more like, holy crap, get a tape recorder. We gotta put this to permanent record.
Typically known as Belushi syndrome. The man was dynamite in front of a camera. Behind, that's where he could do the real damage.
Like, reading the story, like, speaking of Belushi, like, hearing the stories of Dan Aykroyd having to fish out John Belushi to get onto set for Blues Brothers is in of itself, like, makes that already great movie even more mythical. It's
the fact that it was able to be filmed and completed at all.
That's in of itself a miracle.
But this is why it is that we keep B-roll. This is why it is that, you know, like, very quickly when you work, like, you know, when you finally get your first camera, kids, and start working in new media, the first thing that you learn is do not film by the shot. Just say go and don't stop until you get it. Because everything in between is still content.
Johnny Knoxville taught us that over a very, very long career.
And many bruises.
Broken bones, you know, like torn flesh. Oh, God. I know your sort of relationship with Jackass, Mark, but what about you, Carl?
No, I really never grew up watching it, and it wasn't until the movies came out on Netflix later on that I even discovered and fell into it. For the arrogant ninth grader I was, it was of the mentality of MTV, where is the M? That it doesn't belong on my TV. Take that. VH1, that doesn't even know what that stands for. So I ignored Jackass while it was on television, but once you see the movies and marathon them on Netflix, Mark Maron said it best on WTF. There is a primal, visceral humor that comes from that shock of pain. When the sound hits, when everyone else around shudders the way that they do, it taps into something damn primordial, something almost sub and surhuman at the same time just that level of pain. Everyone should have at some point that dumb friend who is missing a chunk off of a finger, missing some teeth, he's missing some hair, and there's a story behind every damn scar. But the best part about this guy, he keeps getting more stories.
And everyone has that friend. And for a long time, my friend as a kid, I won't say his name because he's not here to defend himself, but he was the one who introduced me to Jackass. Because unlike my parents, who were responsible in keeping me away from that because I was 10, his mother didn't care. She let him watch whatever the hell he wants. Coincidentally, that's also the same friend that helped me get into wrestling when I was a kid. But regardless, I didn't like the show as much because it would get this good bit, but then it would just like follow it up with some really dumb crap. But I didn't realize that they were saving all their best bits for the movies. Except for Jackass 2, because Jackass 2 was filled with not really funny stuff, but really painful stuff. Like, in the same way that when you watch, like, 90s wrestling, and it just, like, at the time you're like, yeah! But then you look at it like, oh my god, he broke his neck on that. Oh.
Wow. Alright, no, I'm... What did I say about wrestling? What did I say about... What did I say
it
about we're not...
It comes back. It comes back. That's the problem is none of... Anytime you shoot it down, it just gets back up and keeps rolling with it.
God, I need to get Bennett a shock collar that I can control via Bluetooth.
But going back to the idea that, like, Jackass does tap into something primordial, it's... I totally agree with you. I mean, it's beyond the fact that it's just physical slapstick humor. It's the timing of it. It's the initial shock of what you're seeing done to a human being... And you're filled with this sort of elation, this mixture of, like, concern and anger and surprise that you can only let out with a laugh. And the most important part of that is that, the follow-up shot of them, like, laughing along with everyone else. Because if that didn't happen, it feels too mean. It feels like they're just a bunch of assholes that are just preying upon their friends. When they get up from whatever just happened to them and they're laughing along with everyone else, then you feel like it's okay to laugh.
There you go. Everyone ends up echoing and shadowing in that guy's pain. Because when Johnny Knoxville, like, mounts the huge red, white, and blue rocket a la, like, some Evel Knievel stunt, and it launches off, and you see he's not on it the first time, when it just spins around and basically explodes in midair, your first instinct is, dear Lord, he almost died. They almost filmed his body exploding. And then he just looks at the camera and says, all right, let's try that again. Because that is the best mentality of Jackass, is we got to try to get it. I mean, it's at the end of, is it the first or second movie where the lubed up dude launches off of the slide in the musical number at the end and he crashes into the real life camera set and everything stops? I think that's the second, isn't it?
Yeah, that was the second, because I remember how the first ended, and I remember how the third ended. It's been a long time since I saw the second one. I saw it once, and like, no, I don't need to see that again.
I need to sleep tonight.
No, like, if we're going back to B-roll, I was watching Jackass 2.5, which is nothing but B-roll from Jackass, and they were talking expressly about, like, how they were on filming Wild Boys at the exact same time, so they were out in, like, some tribal area of Africa, and they encountered this tribe that basically were doing, like, really weird and gross stunts along with the Jackass crew, like taking little bees and trying to, and then sneaking up behind someone and stinging them with the bee and then just running away, like, ha ha ha! And, first of all, how the hell did they capture that bee in the first place? I don't know. I can barely swat a fly, let alone catch a bee. But the one part where everyone just kind of took a step back and just like, okay, this isn't funny anymore, was when one of the tribesmen started to, like, eat glass and, like, doing really, really horrifying stuff with sharp objects and just bleeding all over the place. It's like... And that's when Jeff Tremaine, the director of the Jackass movies, just kind of like, okay, this, no more of that.
This, I don't want to play this game anymore.
This is not funny. This is just horrifying. So even the Jackass crew realized that there is a limit. And, like, everyone thinks that there isn't, but there is.
I guess at that point it simply became, I want to do this to myself, but I'm not going to be laughing during or even after it. That when you take out laughter from the equation, that's when it gets far dangerous. That level of vicious self-mutilation. It's one thing for something silly to happen, or even dangerous, or maybe it causes a little blood. If the person's not laughing at the end of it, you're that close to making a snuff film. Mm. Not that you can't sell those as well.
I'm just wondering, like, if your career ever tanks, like, are you just going to start bleeding on stage for otaku kids?
I don't know if there's market.
Wouldn't that just make them so happy? Although I think I'd get a better response to the Geek Kink event.
Probably. I mean, there was a reason why there was a market for bum fight videos.
Oh, it would definitely add a new dimension to cosplay burlesque.
Was?
Well, like, they put it, like, okay, they still exist, but now they can't legally advertise them on television. Like,
yeah, but fucking Archer already ruined it. Like, it'll never be as good as it could be unless it's Pam Poovy with some shock gloves.
It's like, what the? Did you just say that bum fights will never be as good as they used to be now that Archer ruined them?
Yes!
I'll tell you the problem with...
There used to be a golden time for bum fights, and then Archer ruined everything.
Yeah. The problem is now is it's like our generation trying to pitch new programs to TV land is like the bum fights now would be like the people from 98 Degrees or like the other two unknown Backstreet Boys.
or
the other sisters from Full House and Step by Step.
Or the other women of Destiny's Child.
There you have it. The other two.
The other three, remember, there used to be four, but then one of them got crazy and they got kicked out of the group.
Oh, yeah? Well, here's trivia for you. There used to be three chefs on the cover of Cinnamon Toast Crunch, and then Wendell ate them. No, I actually once wrote an article. I used to write for the Bucks County Courier Times for the teen section, Reality, and I once did this maybe five-page expose on the conspiracy theories and murder mysteries and basically true Hollywood stories I thought was over the culmination of the cartoon characters from our serials that we know and love today, the way that Lucky was the last standing of his IRA troop. He was the only one that made it over, but he killed off anyone else of his family, so that's why the kids always have American accents while he has this fake Irish. He's technically Scottish. The fact that Wendell killed the other two and they became Booberry and Frankenberry. And my editor writes me back, Carl, do you have any actual news? Can you trim this down? Because it was twice as long as the expose I wrote on Scooby-Doo, and he eventually just said, fine, we can do an entire inside spread. It'll save us on posting Gennardi's coupons.
So here's what you should have done to your editor at that point. He said, like, yes, I'm working on a hard-hitting expose on the whereabouts of Yummy Mummy. Where is our Yummy Mummy?
He's under wraps right now.
But Tish.
God, can all you right. believe they brought those back this year? Like The Walking Dead were full of cavities this year.
Look, man,
they brought
back Booberry. The fucking cereal, the cereal aisle to me is just a long line of what the fuck these days. I have no idea what's going on anymore. Like I just see bright colors and characters I don't recognize and like characters that get trimmed down because apparently, you know, like fat and cute isn't cute anymore. So like the Cookie Crisp fucking character.
Mark, are you walking down the cereal aisle or watching Crunchyroll?
I have never watched Crunchyroll in my life, Carl, because I have a life. I get my anime delivered the way that real working men get it delivered on DVD.
Well, even if you look at the narrative behind Cookie Crisp, which is a cereal that, for Americans, should not even require advertising. It's like Pepsi and Coca-Cola. You know, like, what kid doesn't want to just have a bowl full of chocolate chip cookies in a bowl full of milk and them to lie and tell you it's part of a complete breakfast that also includes butter toast and some fruit and some yogurt and some actual vitamins and nutrition, because this is just crap for you. This is diabetes waiting to happen. But, like, it used to have the Irish cop, who at this point no one could get away with putting on television.
I'm sorry. I need to put a pin in that. How did you pronounce that?
He said diabetes, as in diabetes, as in move on and shut up. Continue, Carl.
And then you had the traditional crook. And eventually the crook got this fat-ass dog that was completely useless, Chip. And then they cut out everybody to just have the murderous, like he broke his way out of Michael Vick's personal Pokemon tournament, Chip, and then it simply became like what it is now. Chip is basically like what they did with Chuck E. Cheese. He's basically a hipster wolf now, wearing a sports coat and sunglasses straight out of that Poochie episode of The Simpsons. Like, they watched that episode and did not realize it was meant to be satire.
Yeah, which I don't know why it is that you need, like, a cartoon character necessarily to be cool in order to sell cereal.
Remember, like, the Sugar Smacks bear? That yes. guy was just stoned, and he always beat up that old woman just to get cereal again. He was no hero.
Nah, but then again, I always confuse those cereals because they were ostensibly the same cereal. The Sugar Smacks cereal and, like, what was it? The Golden Cracks Frog?
Yeah, Golden Crisp. Same thing. Same thing.
Golden Crisp. And I always got that confused with Honeycomb. It's just, like, there were way too many cereals, especially for my household, which was basically boring ass, you know, Raisin Bran, Grape Nuts. That's it. Stop complaining. Go to school. And I grew up kind of idolizing, like,
you cereal. You grew up simultaneously deprived and extremely sad.
I know. It's a wonder I came out as well-adjusted as I am. There's no laugh in that. But going back to, like, I loved the cereals mainly because they always made the cereals look more fun. But then looking back on the advertising nowadays, it always feels like every single cereal mascot is just some junkie that's trying to push their drug on somebody else so that way they don't feel as sad.
Yeah, the Trix Rabbits, Sunny from Cocoa Puffs. It just comes down that America is born and raised to be dependent on sugar in this weird crack addict fashion. Which
no, incorrect.
Incorrect.
Dependent on corn sugar.
Corn syrup.
More importantly, corn sugar. You have to remember that, like, sugar is not the main addiction of this country. Corn sugar is.
Yeah, if you watch the documentary on Netflix, Fed Up, it is this eye-opening account to they show the brain on sugar, they show the brain on corn syrup, and then they show the third example, and they tell you, by the way, this is a brain on cocaine. They light up exactly the same way. They could have been linked up in some sequence event of holiday flashing lights. And I know it's only November 5th, but that's a Christmas light reference.
No, I'll cop to it because lately I've been addicted to gummy bears. Don't know why.
Yeah.
I've managed to escape that hellhole by developing an allergic reaction to sugar. I can't explain it. It's just every time I have something that is slightly sweet, I just feel bad. It's like this general malaise. No real, like, oh my god, this is giving me a headache, or all of a sudden my joints ache, or something like that. It's just like, no, this is just, no. No, I've had enough. You can keep it. Which is done enough.
So you've developed your own fat shaming. That's brilliant. I need that.
I know, like, my friend Gabe just keeps pestering me about, like, how the fuck you do it? How the fuck did you do it? It's like, I don't know, I just developed it over time. No! You will tell me exactly how the fuck you did it. I want to be able to say no to the BJ's restaurant Paizuki today! Like, yeah, I'll tell you this right now. It's a long, arduous process of realizing that every time you eat sugar, you just feel bad. And then it just becomes quicker and quicker. And then all of a sudden, it got to the point where I was eating my my cousin's kids' Christmas cookies that they baked for the whole family. I had one.
I was hoping you were going to end with my cousin's kids because they were covered in sugar.
No. No, no. That would have made for a way more entertaining and more horrifying story. But getting back to the story, I took a bite and immediate regret. You ever had that moment where you bite into something that you know you should like, but then all of a sudden you realize, no, this is not what I expected. No, 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 no.
A burger then, from Five Guys.
Candy corn past the age of three.
Mm-hmm. And the horrible thing is that they're in the room. They're looking at me as I bite into their cookie. I can't spit it out. I just got to put on my best shit-eating grin and just got to go, oh yeah, that's good. I put it on the napkin. Didn't even touch it.
See, that's because you're a sucker and you signed the social contract.
Yeah, listen, just because there are children in my life and there aren't any in yours doesn't mean you get to have a free pass.
I do what I want. Like, I'm sorry, kids, but that's just kind of the way it is. Like, no, I don't like the taste of your cookie. I just don't. You know, like, I remember...
Welcome to the real world, jackass! I threw it on the ground!
I don't know, like, I remember the first time that I had okonomiyaki, and I don't like fucking mayonnaise. And, like, I don't know if you've ever seen fresh okonomiyaki, but it is horrifying.
I had never had it.
Oh, Carl.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a weird little cum ball.
It is. It's because it's like pancake and then this flaky shit that moves because it's hot. So it's actively moving / melting, and then Japanese mayonnaise on top of that, which is uber vinegary. And I just sat there like, and I was like, you know what, to be like, that was prepared for me by visiting Japanese people who were my friend's parents. And I had a bite and I just went, nope, can't do it. Just can't do it. Sumimasen. I'm going to go get a burger.
From America. Who won the war?
I mean, I gotta tell you, when you don't have kids in your life, a couple of things happen. One is that your sleep schedule becomes your own. But two, Disney World really becomes the happiest place on earth. We just went down there for a wedding over Halloween weekend. And if you don't have a kid that you've got to constantly take to the bathroom, try to feed, tell them not to point and purchase something, if you're not just buying something for the sake of buying it for the luxury of it, you can run through an entire park in just a couple of hours, and then you can run through it drunk later that day. It's incredible. I would have given anything for 12-year-old me to run around Universal Studios sloshed. Donald, come here. You're unappreciated. I can do that too.
See, that's a horrible thought of you running around drunk at a Disney World just because you'd run up to the fucking Toy Story character, scream Andy's coming, and as soon as they don't drop, you just tackle them.
Well, the thing is, what's amazing is that, especially with the character dinners, we do a lot of immersive theater here in New York, and I love the plays where the audience is part of the show as well, so there's no proscenium arts, there's no fourth wall, just you are there interacting with the actor who's in character. And that's exactly what the character dinner is. So if you've got a quip or if you've got an actual quote from the show, you have a blast with it. Like, we did a character dinner surrounded with the cast of Disney's Cinderella, which, I mean, what's there for? If you're a girl, you want to be pretty like Cinderella. If you're anyone else, you hate the prince because he's got no personality. But in the meantime, if the stepmother comes over and you just look up and say, in my own little corner, in my own little chair, look, I can be whatever I want to be, and right now, I want to be your best friend. She has to react to you properly in character, and these people are brilliant improvisers. It really was a testament, especially the shows later at night. Disney culls the damn week. There is not a single person who doesn't perform as a way to live, because if they fail, Disney will assassinate their family.
It's a horrible life I had to imagine to be inside those mascot costumes, because it's not just the fact that you're walking around in a hot costume, it's the fact that you're walking around in that costume not like a normal human being.
Have to work for like an hour. The people who are in full costume, they only really need to work for like an hour before they get a break, and then another, like, really they clock like something like a 4 to 6 hour day.
Trade off like that. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Well, I can guarantee you that no matter what hour you have spent in your life previously, that was the worst hour you'll ever spend anywhere.
No, because you know who's got it the fucking worst of anybody at a Disney park? The guy playing Gaston.
Oh, because now he has to do a push-up contest to any motherfucker who decides to challenge him on it.
Yep.
Not only that, but if they do it back-to-back.
Yeah, because they reserve that right. Like, if a group of kids decide to be dicks, they can be like, I challenge you to a push-up contest. And he fucking shrugs it off and he's like, okay, let's go. And he out push-ups one guy. And then his friend's like, I can do more than that. And then he has to go.
The only thing he could do then is challenge all of them at once to a Pokemon tournament. Oh, and like pull out a deck from some regional champion. Come on, come at me now.
No. See, it's Disney. So it would be a Disney Infinity competition-y thing.
Which nobody wins.
Which nobody plays.
I really do think that the only thing that props up Infinity is the fact that people like to buy the toys because they're well made.
Marvel.
We bought all of our favorite Tsum Tsums.
Yeah, like you never buy the game. You're just walking through Target one day and you're like, oh, Venom, you know, and like, and it's so cute, and you just buy it, having no intention to buy the actual game. And they're just so fucking well made.
I never thought I would live to hear the day of you saying Venom. How cute. in that sincere falsetto. I always thought it would be like Mark looking back. Oh, I see. Big muscles. Cute.
You just don't know me at all. We haven't had the Steven Universe conversation yet. But we'll have it.
I know you'll fucking have it.
But not now. Not now on the podcast. Just calm your tits. All right.
That fucking sword is hovering over my head like the sword of Damocles, okay? Don't think I don't know it's up there.
The worst part is that shit's Vorpal. I've been falling into a recent podcast hint. So originally I was subscribing specifically to a lot of science podcasts and a lot of news, Al Jazeera, BBC World. But I was also missing like my narrative spur because I just don't have enough time. Or whenever I'm cleaning or multitasking, I want to listen to something narrative. There have been a lot of great live RPG podcasts. It feels like some groups have finally buckled down and done it right. There's one I listen to now called Glass Cannon. I've been with them almost since the beginning. There's another group called The Indoorsmen. And it feels like finally enough people are competent enough with editing and with a group awareness of there being an audience that they're willing to set aside the early 20s BS that is an average tabletop group and actually get through the story, actually get through the fight, get through the combat. For me, it's a little of a golden age of a super micro niche within the podcast community.
Here's my problem, and not to cut you off, Bennett, but here's my legitimate problem.
No one will play Besom with you?
No. Calm your tits. 10 by Techo, bitch. So, my problem right now with any form of Let's Play, especially since the PlayStation 4, you know, like, records video of what you're playing, is that, because I've just been looking for various games and seeing, like, oh yeah, you know, in the last 24 hours, 20 videos have been posted about this game or this game or this game. Zero views. And I, like, and that's when it hit me that if everyone's broadcasting, no one's watching. Everyone's just waiting for everyone else to watch their shit. You know, like, we are decimating the audience.
Because anyone can broadcast.
Yeah. Like, if you give everyone the tools to make whatever they want, everyone's going to think that they can make whatever they want. And even though I never want to be discouraging to those who aspire to entertain, to quote Kevin Smith, not everyone can be special and someone has to make the fries. The fact is that not everybody's good enough at improv to do a live Let's Play. I'm really sorry, but that's just the brass tacks of it. And I find myself under constant, like, yammering assault anytime I'm trying to look for gameplay video. Because I actually bothered to sit and watch a Let's Play of Halo 5 because I don't have an Xbox One.
Right.
And thankfully, I did not try and go out and buy an Xbox One because you want my official review of Halo 5? It sucks.
Ooh.
So.
You're allowed to get as salty as you want, but you're absolutely right. The thing is, when someone sits down to create a new media, you're going to have hundreds of people fall to the wayside, but there's going to be someone who gets it right. They add in an extra hint. They add in a little spice of themselves. Either they have the force of personality enough to retain an audience, or they start using the media for what it could be. Like the satirical thing, the funny satirical news bit was mastered by John Oliver, and I see him doing more change in his first season almost arguably than Stephen Colbert was able to do in his whole run of the Colbert run. Colbert was not out there to change the world. John Oliver is not out there to change the world actively, or he's not admitted to it yet. But you'll see that with the great Let's Players. You'll see that with the great podcasts. You have to do something with the media with the medium itself and the media given to you that someone hasn't before. And again, for my money, the people who are doing it great on the live play tabletop RPGs, because I am a tabletop RPG guy, I just never can get the group to sit down long enough to let me kill them effectively enough.
Yeah, because all we know are fucking flakes.
Yeah, it has to go with timing. The friends have to know each other enough to, they do their in-joke reference and then they get right back into it. Or the GM is running them through it, or everyone is comfortable enough with sticking to the script, sticking to the book, to get through something every hour or every 40 minutes.
See, here's the thing, though. Like, I'm not in agreement to the idea that it's a viable statistic to launch 100,000 lemmings, and if one of them has a parachute, that's a win.
Unless you're into lemming omelets, then you're good.
Like, but I don't like that. I really don't like that statistic. I don't like the idea that if we just saturate the ability, you know, if we make easy the ability to produce content, then really all we're doing is running the law of averages in terms of like who produces well and who doesn't. So.
And the thing is, it's not only that, but the hope is if someone picks up early enough, I don't think I'm good at this. I don't think I'm building an audience. I don't think I've effectively learned something from this. They can devote their energies towards something that will work for them, that will either make them happy or garner for an audience. But again, I actually have to agree with you on the 100,000 lemmings dying, and if only one comes up, yeah, you know, maybe it works.
I don't know. Let's also examine the flip side of that argument. If it wasn't there, then that one lemming wouldn't have made it. And can you imagine a world, or at least do you want to imagine a world, where all your favorite internet personalities that entertain you didn't have that chance to do it?
I don't know, because plenty of people launched themselves with enough hard work and enough research. So who's to say that the one lemming who had a parachute had the foresight and the preparation of Batman to think, well, if I run off a cliff, maybe I should have a parachute. Like, that's the thing, is that, like, putting the technology in everybody's hands does not, like, doesn't even guarantee that statistic of 1 in 100,000. It just makes it slightly more likely, because all of a sudden that person didn't have to drop $1,000 for a camera, didn't have to drop 50 to 100 to 500 bucks for a capture card. You know, and that's all well and good, but here's my real example, because this is something that I periodically tell Carl as I move through the world and move through the convention circuit. A mutual friend of ours once told me, I love Carl because he is funny and brilliant at what he does, but I hate Carl because he made what he does look easy.
I'm going to hope and assume that I was the Carl that was being referred to within that sentence. I'm not sure how many other Carls you know, Mark.
Yes. You are the PlayStation 4.
God damn it!
You are the element that launched a million otaku comedians.
You know, there were definitely people before me, and I've been able to find some holo video of it, but I have had issues at other cons with being mistaken for people like that who have just been no good or thrown to the wayside. In fact, when I first got started, and I'm talking like my second appearance ever, I was with my friend who was trying to manage me at the time, Becca. We were at KatsuCon and we sat in on the Geek Comedy Tour, and my first instinct was, ooh, they're doing more cons than I should. Maybe I should step on it and try to do what they're doing. And meeting them years later, I got their main guy, who disbanded the group because he couldn't get enough open micers together. They weren't geeks who did comedy. They were comedians who happened to watch enough DBZ that maybe they could make a Dragon Ball joke. And I ended up getting on his podcast, Nerd of Mouth, at the Creek in the Cave, where one of my later album, Ectokitlorian, ended up being filmed live. It was just one of those neat moments of, I can't consider myself that I've done something new with making nerd stuff funny, because we have to have a great sense of humor with the stories and the characters that we love. But I have been at it for a weirdly long time, given just the short ephemeral nature of the fan celebrity.
Yeah, because we've been running into each other for almost exactly 10 years now.
And you have not changed that jacket.
Nope.
May you actually, not.
Wait a minute. Didn't you just say that you were shopping for a new jacket, Mark?
Yes. Yes, I am. Finally, after a decade. But
I have a jacket probably just as old as yours, Mark. It's that faded green corduroy that you see me in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know when I'm wearing that. I can wear that on bearskin and not even know. That's how worn down that poor thing is. But I can't bring myself to throw it out. There's too much of me in that thing. There's enough DNA and sweat and, you know, hearing that, I hear my fiance cackling in the background. But yeah, there's enough of me in it to consider it a blood relative.
And I've had that jacket too. That was actually the same jacket I was shot with the paintball in, actually. And until the day I had to get rid of it, you could still see the white paint that splotched across the chest. Got me right in the chest too. It wasn't a pretty sight.
So now it's the hat.
Yeah, now it's the hat. But actually, I had that jacket even with the hat. In fact, I think I had that jacket into the first year anniversary on the site. I mean, it's been so long since I've seen that video. So if you go and watch it, and I'm wearing a black hoodie, that's the jacket. I had that jacket since I was 12 years old, and I had to get rid of it when I turned 23. And it was a hard decision, but it was the rattiest jacket I'd owned. But that was because I wore it day and night every winter.
Now,
like, it still fit you after all that time?
It was the baggiest jacket I'd ever owned.
Dude, I'm still running on the Xbox beanie, which you always see me in the winter. I've had that since I was 15, because no other beanie fits my damn head. But, see, here's the thing. Like, I don't mind... Well, like, mind is the wrong word to use. I absolutely am in the support of, you know, like, the call that launches 1,000 ships. You know, like, if someone ever says that, you know, like, Anime Abandoned inspired me to do my own anime review show, great. Awesome. You know, like Dungeon Crawlers made me want to do my own awesome D&D puppet show. Go with God.
I can't deal with competition right now. I can't even deal with... I'm not even handling that Monopoly very well. I'm playing that game of Monopoly with myself, and I might be on the verge of losing, but I'm still pushing it through.
But the thing is that, you know, like, they're like, workshop your shit, you know, like try and hone, like whatever your material is, just try and hone it, sharpen it, do something. And dear God, will you please stop fucking filming your goddamn disembodied heads against green screen so that I can just stare at your fucking emotionless face while you play games? Just Jesus Christ, you like we are in a generation of fucking zombies.
Mecha leka high, mecha hidey hidey ho.
We are. That's what Let's Players are becoming now. They're like, just like every time I turn on a Let's Play video where it's like, ah, well, you know, I can say a little bit of commentary as long as the dude's funny, whatever. You know, like it comes in just like floating fucking head.
You know, you're absolutely right. And the thing is, with the instant launch, with the instant release, the instant gratification that this whole generation that we're just as much a part of as like some 12-year-old who puts up these blogs and they end up getting 12,000 followers by the end of the first day because it's just them chewing on peanut butter and being confused by it. Who the hell knows? The thing is, it isn't until you try it and launch it and you're able to develop that new meta skill of self-critique, just seeing the thing separate from your emotional tone of when you filmed it and why you filmed it, objectively looking at it, that's how you learn to tighten it. And like, I mean, to bring it back to Dungeon Crawlers, the reason I push myself to do this season two is we learned so much of the first season, so much about coordinating puppets, so much about the kind of stories I wanted to tell, so much about where to actually keep Thrax's voice in the back of my head. It reminded me of The Critic, Venture Brothers, and Archer, which for me, the second seasons became so much stronger than the first because they had proven that they could make that world and concept work. But by the second season, everyone who did no work on the first season has been fired, and season two comes around and they realize, here's the groundwork that we have. How can we build upon this? How can we make this ride bigger and brighter and better? And how can we make the world more toward our point?
Yeah, and you know, like my overall test for watching any series, so I'm finding actually that more and more people are adopting this, is that you get 3 to 5 episodes to impress. Nobody's good in the pilot. That's just writ, and I get that. So you got 5 episodes to impress. Elsewise, I if I had the ability, I would cancel you with a shotgun. So, you know, like there really needs to be that kind of, like, if YouTube is generating 24 hours of content every half hour, because, I swear, there are so many people who are posting videos of just like one minuscule thing that happens in a game, a video that is all of 10 seconds long on YouTube. Not set to private.
Or even the Vine culture. There are Vine celebrities. And
I know, but that's I'm fine with that. You want to know why? It's because in the same way that it takes real writing ability to be genuinely funny on Twitter, to be given that limitation of 140 characters and create the perfect joke, for someone to do that kind of chop-socky editing in camera for Vine, like, I have seen brilliant fucking Vines.
Yeah, they earn that respect.
Yeah.
Like, Will Sasso and the Lemon videos are legitimately funny. But that's also a professional comedian using the medium.
Yeah, but I've seen in quotations, amateurs who do that editing in camera, who set up their bits, who bothered to use props, who come up with, you know, their 14-second narrative, and it works, and it's funny, and it just fucking hits, like, all their jokes land. So I can understand that. That's fine. But people who just kind of use YouTube as their Dropbox, I really don't abide that at all. Like, it's just a waste of fucking bandwidth. Something which, even though people seem to think it isn't, is finite. Bandwidth is finite. And we are wasting it on bullshit. Like, there is...
America is addicted to bandwidth. In the next 5 to 10 years, if we do not change any of our bandwidth capabilities, it will be a limited resource. We will go back to the Middle East to steal more bandwidth.
Seriously, like, we will just start annexing other countries to put servers in. That's the next step.
Look, that's my recommendation. If Texas really secedes and becomes its own country or is separate from America, I say we tax the hell out of them and just use all that open space to just build up server chambers. Just build actual Fallout vaults via Fallout, but just have them loaded with servers. Make that episode of South Park real. Ah, go, click on everything. Maybe even a pop-up ad when I see it.
Yeah, just turn Texas into a giant server farm.
If I wanted to, like, with my reticence going on YouTube and adding to, you know, the fuck pile that is everyone adding videos to YouTube, one of the more confounding examples of a subgenre of videos on YouTube is the mukbang. Is it mukbang or mukbang? Something like that, where it's literally just people eating food for 2 hours.
Korea is huge on that for some reason. Now, sometimes it is the personality of the person. When I fell into ASMR briefly, I got into a jogger who lives in New Mexico named Ronsky, who is very, I want to say she was just very honest with her crowd. But primarily, you were listening to someone whisper and put things in her mouth, and you'd hear the chewing noise. And sometimes that is a comforting noise. Turns out for me, it has to be a very specific noise. Otherwise, I just can't. Otherwise, I can't do it. I fell into it as a joke after listening to that This American Life story and article about ASMR. But you're right. Again, sometimes it's the personality, and then sometimes it's got to be that thing that tickles you. Just watching somebody eat. I've been on so many silent blind dates where that's all the other person had. And I got to be honest, none of them ever came back for a second date.
It always helps that it seems to be the cutest Korean girl eating the weirdest and vast amount of food. It's like this entire serving tray filled with udon noodles and Korean barbecue, and like an entire slaughtered pig is on that tray.
Oh my god, because of the fact that I cannot describe this in detail and only know what these videos are because of the fact that we did a Video Girl Eye review, I am winning at life. I am winning because the both of you are just bonding over this, and I am just like, these are my friends.
She goes through an entire bowl of Swedish candy. They have crunchy stuff, they have gummy
stuff.
How
are you engaged?
It's Sweden.
How are you engaged?
You don't know if it's gonna be full of marshmallow or not.
Oh my god.
You don't know if she's gonna keep it down, but she always does.
How are you engaged? How do you have fangirls? What is this Twilight Zone that I live in? Oh, all right, we're talking about Star Trek. Fuck you.
Finally gone where no Swint has ever dared to go before. A Korean girl manhandling udon noodles. We crossed a line.
This is my life. This is the life that I quit my job for.
Oh, don't you feel so proud of yourself?
God damn it. All right, CBS Television Studios announced today that it will launch a totally new Star Trek television series in January 2017. The new series will blast off with a special preview broadcast on the CBS Television Network, but the premiere episode and all subsequent first-run episodes will then be available exclusively in the United States on CBS All Access, the network's digital subscription video on demand live streaming service. The next chapter of the Star Trek franchise will also be distributed concurrently for television in multiple platforms around the world by CBS Studios International. The new program will be the first series developed specifically for U.S. audiences for CBS All Access, a cross-platform streaming service that brings viewers thousands of episodes from CBS's current and past seasons on demand, plus the ability to stream their local CBS television station live for $5.99 per month. CBS All Access already offers every episode of all previous Star Trek television series, as does Netflix.
Oh, boy.
The brand new Star Trek will introduce new characters seeking imaginative new worlds and new civilizations while exploring the dramatic contemporary themes that have been a signature of the franchise since its inception in 1966.
So, the civil rights movement. As progressive as Star Trek was, never forget the black girl still worked the phones and the Asian dude was still the driver.
Well, see, I would only say that that's progressive because of the fact that Sulu never wrapped the fucking Enterprise around a telephone pole, but...
I'll give you that.
So do you think it was J.J. Abrams' luck that he, like, the first time we see Sulu at the helm of the Star Trek, of the Enterprise, and he shifts it into the wrong gear?
Oh, yeah, that was... That was special. Like, many, many parts in the Enterprise are made by what is future Subaru.
Subaru also, GT.
You're talking about like uncomfortable Asian stereotypes. All right, like we have Sulu in the original series be a genius at fencing, or at the very least, he was, you know, just out of his goddamn mind fencing at the air. That's his one character shtick that the general populace knows about. So what do we do for the 2009 reboot? He's swinging a fucking samurai sword. Why? You couldn't have fenced? No, because that looks stupid. We gotta give him a sword. Why have him have the sword in the first fucking place?
At least he wasn't eating a bowl of Swedish candies.
Or udon noodles.
just can't wait for fucking...
The groan is so validating. It's delicious. I feel terrible for feeding off of its glamour.
Carl,
punch it, Sulu! Hold on, I gotta finish this bowl.
Carl, I see you multiple times a year. You just don't seem to realize how easily I can break you in half.
I fear for my life.
Where is
he? I usually know what room you're staying in. Do you really want to go down this road?
Half the time I'm just bumming off of you. This is very true. Dear Lord. Well, there goes season 3 of Dungeon Crawlers.
Yeah.
So the idea of a new Star Trek actually brings up a couple of issues. One of them being where in the timeline of the Star Trek universe they would want to set their story. Will it be Alpha or Delta Quadrant? Because they can't do a prequel the way that Enterprise would, or at least they can't do a prequel as poorly received, I'd think, as Enterprise.
I don't know. I liked Enterprise for what it was. I mean, I talked to Lewis about it because I said, like, yeah, well, Archer doesn't seem like he's such a bad captain. I mean, he's not as bad as fucking, you know, Space Jesus Sisko.
Or Janeway.
Or fucking Janeway, you know, like, my coffee was replicated cold. Self-destruct the ship.
Hey, Janeway.
That was her go-to solution.
Hey, Janeway, we're running low on towels. Ally with the Borg!
You know, it's weird because I have a connection to that show because that was the first Star Trek for me I ever watched as new episodes developed. So I developed a love of it. And the first restaurant gig I ever had on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, I did serve Kate Mulgrew. And as an idiot, because I was so underwhelmed by her performance, I called her your Janeway Mulgrew. And I completely forgot the actress's name and the captain's name. To her face. 4 glasses of red wine later, and she still left a very generous tip. I mean, neither of us were very red in the face, though she got red in the hair later on. And I have to say, she is killing it in Orange Is the New Black. If Janeway was her stepping stone to get to Red, so be it. I love watching her in that show.
I've only seen snippets of her in it, but I
they filmed it in my neighborhood 2 days ago. They're filming the next season.
So just run in the background. Yeah. Make it. Do it.
It was I should not have said yeah to that before hearing you finish that sentence.
Yeah, just streak in the background.
Just run with full body thrack in the background.
Yeah.
Just a 5.5 foot tall puppet. I can attach the legs to my feet. This is a brilliant idea.
You should try and solid snake them like all over the place. Just like make thrack just like show up behind cars.
I tried watching Orange Is the New Black, and it just feels, how do I put this? It feels like it wants to be lesbian porn, but it just is wrestling with itself to try to be an artistic program, but then every so often, hardcore lesbian scene.
A friend of mine from college is Bouncy Boobs toward the end of season 2, and we were so excited for her. I mean, it's the only thing that we've seen her on television for so far, I mean, because she's primarily a writer. But it was a lot of fun. There is a take where she apparently got fondled by one of the actresses, and they ended up paying her double due to something like interactive height. Basically, they paid her extra because one of them copped a feel on camera.
Great.
Just so you know, Netflix is at least paying its dues. Or it's like, actors. Hey,
you were sexually assaulted. Here's an extra fiver.
Oh, God.
But yeah, I mean, I love in New York, and the whole reason I've joined a couple of extras unions is specifically to try and get cast in something Jessica Jones or Daredevil or whatever Marvel tries to film with in New York City. I want to do my best to try and be on or off camera for it. I'm actually really happy to see their portrayal of Hell's Kitchen in Daredevil or what they're going to do with it in Jessica Jones. Because it revitalized a version of New York that no one has seen since the Beat It videos from Michael Jackson or the Ron Perlman live for TV Beauty and the Beast series, where everything just, every grate just spewed stage fog for some reason. And there were no stores. There were just dark alleyways.
But here's the thing, like, while Netflix has a ridiculous penetration, is anybody paying money for CBS content? Like,
no.
Like, I mean, really, does anybody want to watch Murphy Brown that much?
No, and all the other CBS programs are all scattered across, you know, scattered to the winds as far as the other digital platforms are concerned. Pretty much everything you'd want to see on the CBS platform is on Hulu or it's on Netflix. And so I kind of left wondering, where is the market?
Yeah, where is the CBS viewership? They claim that they are one of, I think they're like America's most top-watched network. I'm like, can I tell you about 7 to 8 p.m. when Jeopardy and the sacred duality of Wheel of Fortune follows that? Because CBS is left on by old people who have fallen asleep and don't know what the internet is or haven't paid for Netflix yet. That is what's keeping CBS on televisions. That and sports bars putting on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, because it sure shit ain't Supergirl.
Actually, the funny thing about that is that I walked by my dad watching Supergirl, and he just says, "Well, Supergirl sucks," and then he tunes it on again next week. And so, like, why do you watch it if you hate it? It's like nothing else on.
I'm waiting for Power Girl to show up.
Yeah, really.
He's like, "Well, the one thing I like about that Supergirl, there's a lot of cat fights." It's like, thanks, thanks, Dad.
Yeah, I just don't know, like I don't understand how it is that CBS can persist, but okay, fine. So let's just accept the fact that CBS isn't going anywhere for a very long time. All right, writ. But as far as like, all right, so what do we do with Star Trek at this point? We had Space Jesus, we had Trigger Happy Janeway, who just wanted to solve all problems by destroying the ship. And then we had Archer, who Lewis swears is a terrible captain, and I'm just like, I don't really see it. Like, he doesn't become Jesus, he doesn't commit a war crime, really. And he doesn't endanger people's lives unnecessarily because reasons. Although he does have his Ahab moment, because every fucking Star Trek captain has their Ahab moment.
Yeah, it's a rite of passage, and at this point it's kind of a trope within the writers, because everyone who writes on that show grew up watching another version of Star Trek. Some of them, they carry it over because there is a love and a necessary homage, especially to a franchise where some of the original fans, they're still out there, still active, still alive, kind of one of the only reasons that Geoff Johns is still writing for DC Comics. Something that they could do that I have never seen done in a Star Trek series, maybe in one of the novels. What if they followed a non-Federation ship? What if you followed a Vulcan ship? What if you followed a Klingon ship thrown out at the end, or it did the worst dishonor and abandoned its fleet in the middle of a war to save
because
itself?
All races in Star Trek are something that you can really only take in small doses. I mean, like people who speak Klingon, I'm sure that they would love an entirely Klingon series where we just deal with dark sets and lots of yelling for 44 straight fucking minutes.
It's like, how come we can't get a Ferengi series?
No. You want to know why? Space Jews. That's why.
Spews.
Like, seriously, like, that's why I never liked the Ferengi. I was just like, they're not even dressing
this up.
Because
you don't like Jews.
No, that is not even remotely the reason. You know it. Like, I don't like how shotgun in the face.
Oh, I see.
Mark
backpedaling. I have Jewish friends. Of course he does. He's in entertainment.
And so are you, dick.
Oh.
Yeah.
So go explain why you don't like the Jews, Mark.
You try and corner the bear, and the bear will eat you. No, I just, like, I never liked the Ferengi as a kid, and then it took me a really long time to figure out why, and I just kind of went like, it's because they're this like space Jewish caricature almost, like, especially fucking Quark.
I mean, outside of the visual cues, and the Ferengi always seemed to me like the odd man out. I mean, as far as all races are concerned, there were always that element of there was supposed to be a caricature of something in real life. The original Klingons were communistic, and they were supposed to be like reflecting of the Cold War era of where the show originated from. And when that ended, they kind of turned them less... First of all, they made them more alien-like and less human, and turn them into something unto themselves, just general warrior race, not really attached to any one alien. So the fact that the Ferengi are based off of a caricature isn't new to Star Trek, but I think that is one of the more offensive cases of it. It's not the most.
It's deeply off-putting, or at least it was something wrong enough that as a kid, I knew I didn't like it. I was like, man, you know, like why are the Ferengi so awful? You know?
The entire race just being based on commerce, on amoral, cutthroat commerce, which you could almost spin it as like a metaphor for some views of China, because that is a country that more than willingly kills off its own for profit than any other country. And you ask them about, oh, why are you doing this? Can you please stop? This is a sin against crime, because you learn that the Chinese word for quality control is "you buy now."
Yeah, which, you know, it was open to interpretation right up until they're like, "Oh, the Grand Negus is showing up," and I'm like, "Oh, really? Who's the Grand Negus?" It's Wallace Shawn. All right, that's it.
Yep,
I'm done.
Because if the Federation ship has to center around a very eclectic crew, oh no, this time the Vulcan is the ship therapist. This'll be a hilarious twist. Now the ship's doctor is a hologram. This'll be a twist. If you centered it around a Borg, because the Borg are way more about diversity than really any other race out there in Star Trek, it's just the wrong kind of diversity.
It's the destruction of all diversity.
But they will accept anyone. You gotta give them that.
Oh my god.
Open fucking doors policy.
I don't know. Like, apparently, I'm blinking on his name. Star Trek Next Gen, Will Wheaton's character.
Oh, Crusher.
Wesley Crusher. Crusher. Yeah, Wesley Crusher. He couldn't get into Starfleet. No, apparently the buck stops at Wesley Crusher.
No, you know what? I would take Will Wheaton as the new captain. He's earned it. Like, give me another Federation ship. Just explain it away. Make Crusher the new fucking captain. Give him his, just give him everything. Just hand it all over. Hand him the keys. I'd take.
Yeah. With him and Chris Hardwick as like his first commander. There you have it. Felicia Day as their main engineer.
Just hand them everything. Now I'm off.
There you go.
You ruined it. You were on the fence with Nerd Seacrest, but you ruined it with Felicia Day.
Would you accept Jessica Chobot?
You know what?
Oh, he's thinking about it.
You know what? I would.
We hear a ponder.
I would. Oh. I've always liked Jessica Chobot, and most recently the Metroid short film that she did was really good. I never would have thought of her in terms of like just stunt casting as Samus, but she was really fucking good. So,
maybe she's gotten better since her portrayal in freaking Mass Effect 3, but her voice acting was as stiff as a plank.
Yeah, well, that's Mass Effect 4, isn't it?
Simon Pegg, would that be okay? Why is it that every time I come on the show, we talk about a future revamp of a beloved franchise?
Because that's what's happening in the nerd world at all times.
It really is, just being unhappy with casting, so we just dream.
Oh, God. Like, exactly, like, going back to Hardwick there for a moment, like he doesn't have enough to do already. He's on a week, a weeknight series, 4 days a week. He's on a podcast that's turned into a television show for some god-awful reason. And the best thing that could have happened to Hardwick is that Breaking Bad ended. And that gave him some time. Now we didn't have to talk bad.
I don't know. Like he looks like he just always looks tired to me now. And it's like where'd fun Hardwick go? Like I know Hardwick's in his 40s, and he's been hiding that extremely well. But it's catching up to him. And I'm just like, well now, you know, like when it was Hardwick and Pereira, everything was awesome. When it was Hardwick and Munn and Pereira, all things were great. And then, you know, like, the world moved on, and Pereira's doing whatever the fuck he's doing, and Munn's doing legitimate acting now, and she's fucking Psylocke. And all that we're left with is Hardwick having become Nerd Seacrest. And I'm like, that's kind of a shame.
And what kind of happens is that while, like, Wheaton and Hardwick aren't necessarily the nerd world's Al Sharpton and Joe Biden, they really will throw their weight around and kind of take that claim. Oh, here's another 2-minute monologue from Comic-Con. Send that straight to upworthy.com.
I don't know. I feel like at any moment, MemTV is going to look at Hardwick and realize, hey, we could reboot Cupid.
Not successfully, but we could.
I don't know. I mean, like, I know that Hardwick works fucking hard. Would I want to see him on a Star Trek show? Like, maybe as, like, an episodic character, but not as part of a bridge crew. Like, Wheaton, absolutely, because Wheaton just... You know, it's like when Bosch comes back to be a Power Ranger, you just know he knows what he's doing.
So you just see him, like, taking helm of a ship, and... But the question I'm left asking myself, hearing this new Star Trek series in the making, is that... The movies prove that people still associate with the name... Star Trek. It's still within the cultural landscape. But I'm left wondering, what is there left to do? You rebooted the entire film franchise. You rebooted the entire universe.
Horribly. Just with,
horribly. Yeah,
They rebooted it.
They rebooted the world entirely, which, you know, like, for good or for ill, that's what happened. Except for Enterprise. Enterprise is safe. That's left completely gone. Because remember, Enterprise happened before the original Star Trek, right. Like at least 90 years. So that is the only, as far as the original series are concerned, Enterprise is the only one left untouched. So what's left for them to do, though? Especially when you realize that the old series have been retconned out of existence. Do they try to reboot the television series again?
I don't know. Like it really, because studio systems tend to think that multiple continuities confuse audiences, which I don't really understand how that's possible, but... Whatever. That seems to be what Disney Marvel thinks. So that means that really whatever it is that we get probably is going to dovetail off of the Abrams Star Trek, which means that we'd probably get a fucking reboot of TNG. Or something TNG-esque.
I don't know. I'm just not... I feel like that's... It feels weird because I grew up with Next Gen. The tail end of Next Gen.
Mm-hmm. And I remember staying up with my family way past my bedtime just to see a plot that I had no way of knowing or understanding. But I liked it all the same because I liked the doors that make the sound.
Yep. But and if they got into the holodeck, that was the ship's Imaginarium.
And that always confused me as a kid. But going back to the point at hand, seeing them trying to capitalize on the finite lifespan of the renewed interest in Star Trek, especially within the shadow of the way, way renewed interest in Star Wars, it feels like they're doing this. They should have done this at least 2 years ago.
Okay, I see. It's also that the show is going to be dealing with science that at this point, the science fiction that was predicted in the original Star Trek is going on science fact now. They're going to have to play with a lot more techno babble to a point where they're going to start pulling in live commentary from deGrasse Tyson and Bill Nye, who could not have more than enough of the spotlight. Those two are, at this point, almost overexposed. But all for good measure. They're both very hardworking, very good entertainers and teachers at the same time. But for me, I worry about, as someone who loves the sciences and is really fascinated with space travel, what are they going to do to surprise us? They've done almost every story. They've explored almost every possible story. A sci-fi story is just a fantasy story where you replace the Centaur with a Klingon.
But see, here's the thing, is that the sense of wonder in Star Trek is mostly gone. You know, like the thing about Star Trek is that, you know, like it always, as a kid, it filled you with wonder, that sense of the unknown. You know, it wasn't that space is, you know, death and disease wrapped in darkness and silence. It was, you know, it was the opening monologue. And, you know, like, yes, space is a dangerous place, but all worthy endeavors inherently come with danger. But you know, like in TNG really did continue to kind of capture that. But, you know, like my problem with Deep Space Nine became that, you know, like the only lesson you come away with was Space Jesus Sisko is that Starfleet is corrupt all the way down. Like, hold on, let's dig up Roddenberry, get a spreader, open his chest and shit in the cavity where his heart used to be.
Ugh.
You know, that's Deep Space Nine to me. And then that trickled backwards into fucking TNG when they did the movies. So the wonder of Star Trek is gone, and no amount of lens flare could fix that. You know, no amount of Abrams wanting to inject Star Wars into Star Trek could fix that. The fact is that Star Wars officially has the market cornered on the wonder of a galaxy far, far away. And that Star Trek just lost it. Star Trek is just space Call of Duty now. And I'm kind of left to wonder, you know, like how do you get Roddenberry's Star Trek back?
I don't know.
How do you work it to a whole generation to make them passionate and fascinated with science?
And look towards the stars.
The universe that they are floating in.
Yeah. Like, how do you get that back when you've got a studio system that is afraid to take risks? When you have, you know, like, they're going to go with writers that they feel comfortable with who aren't going to take very many risks, or they're going to farm too much from the series that came before them. They're going to farm too much from continuity that may or may not fucking matter. You know, they're doing it all on, and on top of that, they're doing it on an online platform domestically, which nobody fucking uses, and that doesn't exactly have the same point of entry as a theater does, or as airing it on CW does. You know, like Arrow and Flash and soon to be Legends of Tomorrow are continuing to kill it. You know, like they're killing it every fucking week, and meanwhile I'm just going to like be hearing whispers in my background about Star Trek for the people who happen to pony up for this dumbass service for the one show. Like, what's $6.99 on top of the $8.99 I'm paying for Netflix, the $9.99 I'm paying for Hulu, the $100 a year for Amazon Prime? You know, like, what's another $5.99 a month?
At a certain point, something's got to give. And I think there is nothing that CBS can do with the Star Trek series that would make me want to pay for this subscription service.
Oh, fuck. Just... Yeah, no fucking way in hell. Like, I buckled on Hulu. I did. I said, I've got Netflix. I don't need Hulu. And then stand-up comedy started disappearing. And then BBC shows started disappearing. And I went, fine, I'll get Hulu. Ugh. And I buckled on that. But I am not buckling on Amazon Prime. I am not. I wouldn't buckle on CBS. I don't care how cheap. I wouldn't care if it's a dollar.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is as much as I enjoy Star Trek, there is nothing that they could do. There's no casting or writing staff or something they could announce that would make me want to pay for that, for everything else that would come with CBS. It's not worth me handing them just to get Star Trek. Whatever they could do to get me just Star Trek, I'd be excited for. But I'm not going to subscribe to CBS for the potential of everything else, because I've happily not watched CBS in the last, what am I now, the 28 years.
Yeah, it just feels like a really losing battle in that way, where you know, like, I don't know anybody who's excited for new Star Trek series. Like, I keep seeing articles, but I didn't see anyone on my Facebook feed losing their shit over it. And that's kind of an indicator, isn't it? You know, like, nobody's losing their shit over Star Trek Beyond. No one's losing their shit over the idea of a new Star Trek series. And, you know, like, even, you know, like, even if they come out with a trailer, like, I don't even think it would have given me the fizz. But then again, what does these days?
What we do see, especially because the younger are the loudest, especially when it comes to new media, when it comes to new shows, we see people gravitating and being super excited over the new franchises. For me, the last relaunch that got people genuinely excited really was the My Little Pony. The good and bad that came of it. That was one of the last times I saw something from the 80s get beautifully redone, remembered, and brought in a brand new audience for that. And I maybe we're out of beloved franchises to relaunch and reboot, because at this point, we're going to be an echo tunnel facing a mirror that's facing another echo tunnel. You see the main enthusiasm coming onto the new shows. Sorry, Bennett, again, but the Steven Universes, the...
Adventure Time, Rick and Morty,
Rick and Morty, which is interesting because Rick and Morty does read as this interesting fan letter homage or almost best of album of all the great sci-fi tropes of the 80s, while really being its own thing emotionally. I am a diehard. If there were anything, it would be my first official tattoo. Like, I truly love and respect that show. It's a neat new time for content creators, but you've got to be sure that you strike it right.
I find myself on the outside looking in as far as this new renaissance of shows that are just basically encouraging people to binge watch on these platforms, Netflix, Hulu, what have you. More often than not, I'm left with three or four episodes and I'm like, well, I can understand why people like it. It's just not made for me. And it's been a long, long time, long, long time since I've actually found a new show that I happened to stumble upon, not by anyone else's recommendation, but I just stumbled upon, that I really enjoy. And it's a rare thing for me. It's something I treasure.
I really got to ask you then, what in recent memory for you was one of those gems that you stumbled upon?
The last one, I'm still in the middle of watching it. It's a new anime called My Love Story. And
I love My Love Story!
Yamato!
He loves her so sincerely. He's such a giant kid.
Oh my god, is this going to go on for a while? Because I could go and take a shit.
She bakes all these cakes and he eats them all.
Mark. I'm sorry. You're going to be left out of this conversation for a bit.
The gentle, noble giant who finds a girl that he's head over heels for. How would you not appreciate a show in the themes like that, Mark?
It's not that I don't appreciate it. It's that I haven't seen it yet because it doesn't have a dub. It's that simple.
Fair enough. For those of you who'd like to kickstart Bennett and I doing the voices of My Love Story,
We'll provide an Indiegogo campaign below this episode.
Yeah, I'm glad that you two are super besties now. That's so great.
I mean, you had him in your corner all throughout this podcast, then all of a sudden, I just said my love story. Oh, defection! Kind of my kind of the corner.
Oh, no, I can turn Carl back to my side anytime I want. That's just how.
He almost made this into a Royal Rumble. Like, he's the one who brought the ladder into the ring, and then I came in with a chair. He provided me with yet another chair. I'm dual-wielding metal chairs right now. We've made it into another wrestling.
I can change the direction of this conversation just by saying all I want to do is see you turn into a giant woman.
Yeah. Aww.
And there he is.
That's nice. But hey, Mark, would you like to be my other Dudley and then take freaking Carl into a table?
Stop playing tug of war with my damn heart. What is this?
Somebody get me a broken pair of glasses so I can tape them up. I just put Carl through a table. Euphoria.
Okay, so Carl, please tell us about what it is that you're doing with Dungeon Crawlers. Ago.
I am grateful that after a good hour and a half, I finally get to ask, what is the guest up to? No, thank you guys again for taking the time to have me bump up on the show. So right toward the beginning, early half of 2015, we wrapped up Dungeon Crawlers with what I think is a very cool first draft of a show that I could definitely do way more with. We have officially launched the Kickstarter for season 2. We've set the bar lower than I thought I would, but depending on what you guys give, it gives me the option of having more internet people in. It buys me the time to create more original songs for the show, to fund more puppets, more characters, essentially where we left Benny and Thrack off on Dungeon Crawlers, which is a YouTube-specific puppet sitcom with bad roommates. Thrack the Cyclops, Benny the Wraith are monsters in a D&D dungeon. They are totally aware of this. But before they do their day jobs, they have to first survive being roommates. By the end of season 1, the entire cave was collapsed. The Silicon Dragon was nowhere to be seen, and Princess Yowie and Jill went off to start their own two-girl-person adventuring team, which leaves Benny and Thrack living on government subsidies and starting up a brand new Cave of Deadly Doom in the Section 8 subsidized Silver Trailer Park of Deadly Doom. So now Benny and Thrack have to continue killing adventurers in the backseat of a pickup truck and a trailer park. And that's what we're basically asking people to help us fund, help us to buy the time to grab more puppets, more scripts, and really make season 2 the best that it could possibly be. I'd like to think that with season 1, we got the hiccups out of the way with green screening. We taught ourselves to green screen through it. I taught myself how to do a serialized show. I taught myself puppeteering. We taught ourselves how to coordinate.
And you taught yourself to love.
I taught myself to love the voices in my head, and they learned to hate me on a whole new level.
I grow stronger with that hate. Shut up and let him talk! You don't tell me how I'm supposed to feel, Thrack.
But that is the hope. The Kickstarter is up and live, and we're going to be doing it until early in December, and I know it's so close to the holidays. I know it's so close, but this... For me, this is my last chance to prove that I can write funny. I can make my, I can take the geek homage and media that I grew up with and make my own. What we always see with D&D and especially fantasy and tabletop media, you see the nerds always making fun of the players, always making fun of the player characters of this is such a gross immaturity. No one ever asks what the hell the monsters are doing as they wait for PCs to come along and kill them. And I focused upon that when I DM'd, and I focused upon that as a writer. The joke for me is not only are Thrack and Benny, like, resetting the acid pit, or cleaning the gore off of the spiked, or just polishing the leftover Indiana that's jonesing around on the giant bowling ball, but then they have to deal with the postman, they have to deal with the Netflix guy, they have to deal with returning something that they borrowed from their neighbor, and not placing a curse or killing their neighbor. There's a whole lot of benefits. It gives people the chance to either to name a zombie, to get an MP3 collection of the characters giving off some of their favorite catchphrases. off to you guys as ringtones. And who knows what else you guys could unlock. We've already got the Thrak hats involved in production. We've got little vials of Cyclops tears, though Thrak will tell you Cyclops are too perfect to cry. I'm trying to give back because it's been an incredible outpour of the first viewership of the first season. And I know I could make the second season what the show deserves to be if I'm just given the chance and the time.
Man, you should run for office.
I'm working on it. Well, look, Benny the Wraith already announced he's running for the Republican candidate.
I want you to be honest. I'm not going to beat around the bush. I'm going to beat Jeb Bush to death with Judge Scalia's jawbone. I'm going to trump anything Santorum throws my way.
So let me get this straight. If we fund this project, will you make anime great again?
I will make puppets and tabletop what it should be for the next generation. No one can make anime great again, save for Anno going back on his sadness medication or a new Dragon Ball series.
Cause everything all is new again. Get out your tap shoes, your bright blondie wigs. Let's go backwards when everyone jigs. And Yamcha's still dead inside.
Were you just, like, holding on to that chestnut until now?
It's all it takes to keep Piccolo alive.
That is the brilliance of Carl.
But yes, everyone, please give what you can for a second season of Carl's show. It's epically deserving, as this podcast hopefully proves.
Yes, don't you want more of this man?
Don't you need more of this man?
In your homes, in your lives.
In your head.
Right behind you.
Right behind you, lurking, tapping against the glass, reminding you that it's only 5:50. You've got 10 minutes left before 6 a.m. rolls around, and you've on the last quarter of your battery on your flashlight.
Hello!
God, you would be the most horrible alarm service ever. Like,
this is your morning wake-up call. Oh, Jesus! Remember that dream you're having. Remember this dream. You're awake. Sorry.
I think what really sells it is the fact that you're...
Wake up! You have a boner! Wake up! He has a boner!
I think what really sells it is the fact that your Skype icon is you with one of your puppets. Your skull puppet.
That would be Benny, and he's going to have a blast next Halloween. I'm going to bring him down to Disney World.
And scare children more than the freaking...
Yeah, will they let you bring a puppet into Disney World that's unlicensed?
Like, competition, that's the last thing they want.
Like, what if they stole Benny from you? Then what would you do?
I would dress up as Thrak and I would bring him back a la the blue Big Bird movie from the 80s.
Oh my god.
So, like, you are just filled with not only just horror, but sadness.
And why bad would you ideas.
And why would you invoke, you know, that scene from that movie? Why? Why?
And don't feel bad. Don't feel Bluebird.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I think we need to end this fucking right now before he just starts talking about Land Before Time. Mark, I think you know what needs to be done. Do what you do best. Bring us on home.
Intro music by Nick Vaughn, outro music by George Sakalis. You can check out both of their works by following the links below. You can now take Super Toolshed wherever you go. Just go to bendthesage.com/supertoolshed. For Ben the Sage and Uncle Yo, I'm Mark the Engineer. And till next we beat, the shed is shut.